Welcome, welcome, curious souls, to the Macabre Emporium, your sanctuary for the unusual, the mysterious, and the appalling.
Step through our cryptic doorway into a world where secrets whisper and enigmas come to life.
I'm David.
And I'm Sarah.
Together, we're your custodians of the macabre, guiding you through tales that defy the ordinary.
Discover the untold stories, from lesser-known cases of true crime to the bizarre events that captivate us.
Join us on a journey to the shadows where the mainstream fades and the extraordinary beckons.
So whether you seek the bizarre, the eerie, or the chillingly obscure,
you're in for a treat here at Macabre Emporium.
Welcome back to Macabre Emporium. This is episode 99.
And if you forget when the exact time to chime in happens, welcome. No, I'm just kidding. Because it's always at 38 seconds when that ding comes in. Okay. And it's whatever. 99 episodes. And it's the first time she's made that mistake. Even though we've changed music since the beginning. But yeah.
Yeah.
2 weeks will be episode 100. We have no idea what we're going to do.
Nope.
Even though technically we are over 100 at this point.
But we've been over 100 for a bit.
Right. But 100 official episodes, though.
Right.
But it is what it is. Yeah. Not much has gone on here at the Macabre Emporium front, really, since our last time talking to you guys.
Not a thing, actually.
Nope. It's been kind of boring since our last one. I mean, our big highlight was the ghost concert this year, but there's a possibility we may or may not go back to some place we investigated before, but who knows? We'll see. But this week, it's an episode from me.
Yes.
And it's got some true crime roots, but it's not true crime.
Well, then I don't want to hear it.
Well, all right. We'll see you. We're out of here. Bye. Hit the outro button. Pause it. Just kidding. We're going to do that one of these days in an episode. Everybody does it at least once. What? Not this week.
Nope.
I don't know. This is a history episode with a root in of it in true crime.
Okay.
But as soon as I tell you what it is, you'll be like, okay, that makes sense. So what does...
So just don't tell me. Just dive right on in.
All right, so dive right in?
Yep.
Okay, so you ready to get started then?
I is.
All right, let's get going. So you ready to get started?
I am.
All right, well, let's get going. Before the 1930s, the Texas prison system had a poor reputation. Due to post-Civil War and Jim Crow laws, black Texans were targeted and their sentencing would result by giving them harsher sentences compared to whites during this era, creating a huge influx of prisoners, which the state of Texas would lease out of private companies for labor, i.e. farms, railroad, any large construction projects. They would eventually move away from this contract leasing by the end of 1912 to state-owned prison farms after reports of inmate abuse, neglect, mismanagement, and corruption. Some of the brutal treatment these black inmates faced was inadequate food, clothing, shelter, limited opportunities for rehabilitation and parole. Besides being overcrowded, a lot of the prisons also lacked minimal amenities like running water and health care for convicts. In 1929, overcrowding of the prisons led to breakdowns in discipline in the prisons. In June of that year, 44 men escaped the Clemens Farm by walking off the job. In September, 18 tunneled their way out of the wing far that houses the inmates with tuberculosis and other disabilities. In total, 302 would escape. The inmates staged hunger strikes and threatened a riot. The governor of Texas, Dan Moody, said, "If I had a dog, I thought of anything, I would not want him kept in the Texas penitentiary under its present conditions." In 1931, Marshall Lee Simmons, the general manager for the prison system for the state of Texas, had an idea to create something to put the Texas prison system in a better light, I guess you could say, with the general public, and that was a rodeo. Leading up to the creation of the prison rodeo, the Texas legislators weren't focused on rehabilitation of prisoners or providing them with recreational opportunities. Simmons saw the prison rodeo as a way to improve the system's reputation with the general public and raise money from taxpayers that would be reluctant to fund prisoner education and recreation.
A prison rodeo.
Yep. The Texas prison rodeo is what we are talking about this week.
Like, did they make them the clowns?
They were everything.
Oh, the fuck. Okay. Continue.
Simmons did have somewhat of an uphill battle to get the prison rodeo going. This being during the Great Depression, as we all know, everyone was broke and trying to just survive day to day at this point.
Right.
Also, with religious beliefs in Texas, if it would even be worthy to allow prisoners to indulge in rodeo for the resource costs it would create. Albert Moore, the prison's welfare and entertainment director, Huntsville Warden Walter Wade, and prison livestock supervisor R.O. McFarling, only initials were given, believed in the prison rodeo. With the growth of revivalism and Pentecostalism in the state of Texas between 1926 and the 1930s, the prisons went and got the blessing from the local religious leaders to hold the rodeos on Sundays in October. But later on, this would start a schedule of weekday rodeos as the prison rodeos grew more popular.
So these prison rodeos were done on Jesus' day?
Mm-hmm.
God. Okay.
The first rodeos were held in the baseball park of the Walls Tigers baseball team, which was a prison team for the Huntsville unit.
Okay.
Here, the inmates at the Huntsville prison would build an 800-seat stadium. The first rodeo attendees would be small crowds of local citizens, prison staff, and inmates. But in the first two years of the prison rodeo, crowds would swell to 15,000, and people would travel to Huntsville to see the wildest show behind bars. Some of the pictures I did see of this from the 1950s, when they built a much larger stadium, there was one, like, there was, like, all the grandstands for general population. And then there was one section a little bit more segregated with a giant fence around it.
Makes sense.
For the inmates to watch as well, too.
Makes sense. Don't want them getting out.
Well, the interesting thing is, being a black and white picture, you know, black and white pictures of large crowds are pocketed in, like, different shades of gray and white. But there's just this one solid block of white because of all the inmates in their prison whites.
Jeez.
In a clip from an interview on easttexashistory.org, Connie King said the atmosphere wasn't like you would think it would be entering a prison. It was more of a celebration-type atmosphere, as the inmates were enjoying themselves being rodeo clowns and cowboys. She didn't specify what year, but she did say she remembered that most of them did wear white uniforms, and this could also be seen in some home footage that was available on this website. I had also seen a photo in a different article from TexasHighways.com of inmates wearing traditional vertical striped shirts and pants with their chaps and cowboy hats.
Wow.
Also, with the things with the rodeo clowns in this home footage, one of them, they were carrying signs between two of them. Was like, does anybody have a spare hacksaw or an old hacksaw? Or has anybody got a ladder, you know, just for comic relief kind of thing, being from the rodeo clowns, being prison inmates, you know?
Yeah.
And, of course, even though this is a prison rodeo, they still held your traditional rodeo events like bronco riding, saddle, and bareback. Inmates tried to ride bucking horses for, you know, the full 8 seconds, same rules as a pro rodeos would. Bull riding, this most famous and crowd-pleasing event, inmates rode massive bulls, often with minimal training. This was one of the events that produced inmate legends. Steer wrestling, or also known as bulldogging. A rider jumped from his horse onto a running steer and tried to wrestle it onto the ground by its horns. Calf roping, inmates tied rope of running calf, dismount, and tie three of its legs together in the fastest time. Team roping, basically the same thing as teams. Or barrel racing came in later years of the Texas rodeo, prison rodeo. Bleh. This one wasn't as consistent, but in the later decades, they sometimes included barrel racing, usually performed by the female inmates or exhibition riders. And some of the more wilder events they had over the years are the hard money race, which was one of the most popular events, because this was when 40 inmates all wearing red shirts would enter the arena while a bull was turned loose with a tobacco bag tied to its horn stuffed with money. Inmates had to wrestle the bull to get the sack of money, and whoever got it got to get the money. Chaos was guaranteed, of course, during this event.
So they basically went in as like the red cape for the matadors. Oh, good lord. How many got fucked up, though?
From what they said, a lot of this was just minor injury stuff. I'm sure there were some severe injuries of broken bones and whatnot over the years, but overall, minor injuries basically happened.
Yeah.
There was also the rescue race. One inmate had to swoop another off the ground and onto a galloping horse like a cowboy stunt show, but with zero practice.
That sounds dangerous.
And there was the buddy pickup, similar to the rescue race, but it usually ended in a spectacular wipeout since timing and trust were in short supply being in prison. Bull poker, which is an interesting one. Inmates sat around a card table inside the arena while a bull was turned loose. The last man still sitting at the table won, often ended with the table flying into the air. And sometimes it was the bull would take everybody out in one shot or pick them off one by one.
But it was still whoever was the last one standing.
Last man standing is the winner. Wild cow milking. teams of inmates had to rope and milk a wild cow, then run the tiny amount of milk they got to the judges. And my first time I read this, all I could think of was in the movie Kingpin. Hey, I milked your guys' cow for you. We don't have a cow. And there was scramble races like pigs or cats greased up with lard, which would then turn loose in arena, which inmates had to catch them by the hand, and, you know, just more chaotic fun, basically.
Yeah.
Time magazine reported 2,000 to 3,000 people would be turned away, while 25,000 others eagerly paid their 50-cent admission fee to the rip-roaring show over the years.
25,000?
Yep.
Wow.
Inmates were not required to participate in the rodeo, or were paid to, but they were required to do tryouts first before they could ride. Most inmates participated in the rodeo to change up their normal routines while incarcerated and win money for their commissary. The prize money from the hard money event, the one where 40 of them wore red shirts to grab that bag, would be $50. And I remembered to inflate this, but I apparently forgot to do the admission cost, which would be $527 and some change. Here in 2025 when we record this episode, and ended up being to $1,500 with donations. In later years, the standard flat would be $1,000.
Huh.
Inmate O'Neill Browning has been accredited with bringing the hard money event to the rodeo in Texas after seeing it at the Oklahoma Prison Rodeo. Also, one of the other main events that was like the show closer other than the hard money event was one called the Mad Scramble, where they would have 10 inmates riding bulls in the arena at one time.
That also sounds dangerous.
Well, yeah, that's what most of the people came for. The rodeo was to see, you know, a lot of danger and a lot of injuries and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I guess they're getting what they paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just Texas that did these prison rodeos.
Yeah, we'll get there. I have some states that did that later.
Okay.
Browning would be one of the more notable prison rodeo cowboys. He would win top hand 7 times in the prison rodeo in Texas, despite losing a thumb during the steer roping event. He was serving a life sentence for murder after killing his father with an axe during a drunken rage.
Jesus.
In the 1950s, a more permanent rodeo would be built out of concrete and steel and could sit 20,000 spectators, and well-known country acts would perform here over the years. Johnny Cash would actually play at the prison rodeo 10 years before releasing At Folsom Prison.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Other headliners would include John Wayne, Steve McQueen, Loretta Lynn, and Willie Nelson, and of course, Dolly Parton. Because you can't do anything country without Dolly Parton being there, or Willie Nelson, or Johnny Cash.
Yeah, he's been there since the beginning of time.
Other than Keith Richards, dirt formed around Willie Nelson and Keith Richards.
Right.
Some of the other entertainment did come from in-house. Candy Bar, born Juanita Dale Slusher, was a burlesque dancer in Dallas, Texas, and made headlines in 1956 for shooting her alleged abusive husband. Even though the charges were dropped, she was arrested in 1957 for marijuana.
Are you shitting
me? Oh my God! Yeah, I know. It was a different time then, so. And was an inmate at the Gory Unit, the all-female prison at Huntsville. She would also join the Gory Girls and All-Women's Prison Country String Band and be their singer. Zora was also a men's country western band featured in some of the archived films I did see, but I couldn't find any information on this male country western band.
Yeah.
During the 1960s, when the professional rodeo circuit was segregated, the prison rodeos were not, making it one of the first desegregated sporting events in the South, even though the spectators were still segregated, which a lot of the pictures I did see they weren't, but
yeah.
There was no date given on it, so it could have been, you know, after the civil rights movement.
Mm-hmm.
In 1972, brought big changes to the rodeo. This is when women were able to participate in some of the events as well. This was a move by the state to save money from trying to hire big-name acts, like I mentioned earlier. Before this, women inmates were tasked more with sewing the black and white striped uniforms the cowboys would wear. They would participate in select events. The women would also participate in calf roping, the grease pig scramble, pig sacking, which is like... There was what in some of the footage of that was they would work in teams of 2 and they would go after a pig, put it in a bag, and then they would have to put it back in the hog trailer to win that the pigs came out of.
Like, how big were the pigs?
Like, just normal, smaller, teenager size, not like the giant.
And not the 100 pound ones that we see.
Yeah, not like the big giant prize ones at the, you know, state fairs you see there can't move because they're weigh so damn much.
The ones that actually have ass cheeks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
And they also would participate in exhibition races and relay races, such as like the barrel racing. Even they were not, the women inmates were not allowed to participate in the more dangerous events like the hard money race and bull riding. Lilia Harper, who was interviewed about her participation in the rodeo, she said, "I think it's great and exciting and looks forward to it." While she was serving her 12-year sentence for murder, even when she was to be paroled in September, before the next rodeo, she also said she wouldn't mind staying another month just to be able to participate in the rodeo again.
She was like willing to stay in jail to do it again?
She just wanted to stay one more month just so she could do the prison rodeos at Huntsville. In the little video footage I could find online of the women events, the women wore more colorful uniforms that put them in teams. So like two of them would be in orange, two are in green, two are, you know, so on and so forth. Unlike the striped uniforms the cowboys wore. Women participation in the events had mixed reviews from the press, as Jean Lyons from the Texas Monthly reported that they observed women participants were less likely to invite their families to watch them. Patricia Aldicardo of Galveston told Lyons when she was asked, she told her husband not to bring the children to the rodeo. "It hurts too much to see them and not be able to get to them and touch them. They don't understand and it would make them cry." The Texas Prison Rodeo would come to an end in 1986 after 55 years. The arena built in the 1950s needed serious repairs, and the state didn't want to spend the $500,000 at the time to make the needed repairs to the bleachers, the logistics building, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
The last rodeo would be held on October 26, 1986, featuring a performance from the Judds. Other reasons why the prison rodeo came to an end were the cost of putting it on and cultural shifts. It was a moneymaker when cowboys were in fashion. Another cost would be paying overtime for officers to direct traffic, to stand guard on the outside of the arena, you know, and stuff like that.
Probably took a lot of them.
In the 1990s, there were attempts to revive the Texas Prison Rodeo, but they didn't really gain any traction. And in 2012, due to being a safety hazard, the Texas Prison Rodeo Arena would be demolished, even though in 2019 there was a bill submitted to the state by one of the state representatives, which I forgot to put his name in here. He did introduce a bill to revive the rodeo, but it never gained any traction.
Yeah.
And Texas wasn't the only state to have its rodeo featuring inmates. Alabama, Arkansas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma all had prison rodeos. Oklahoma and Louisiana still have them to this day.
Really?
Yep.
Huh.
And I did look into that. Angola, Louisiana has one, and then CBS Good Morning America did a piece on it. And with theirs also, and also with the Texas one, I'm sure it's going to be with all of them. There is also a craft fair basically outside the rodeo arena for the things that the prison trustees, the inmates that good behavior, they're given more responsibilities and whatnot, are able to sell things that they make.
Okay.
Like, there was one guy at the Angola prison, he was in there for, I want to say he's serving a 25-year sentence for murdering his wife, but he makes leatherwork stuff, and then he sells that to them, you know, at the rodeo craft fair.
Right. Then I'm sure money goes on commissary.
Oh, I'm sure that's what it is. But Actually, a lot of that money from that is also goes into the same type of things that the Texas prison rodeo was created for, was for prison rehabilitation.
Yeah.
That video was from 2019, if I remember right, 2009. They believe that it brings in about $4 million, that rodeo itself brings in about $4 million to use towards prison education. There was one event that I did see at the Angola prison rodeo that was quite interesting. Like, it more or less, like, remember being pulled on a sled by a bicycle?
Yeah.
Basically the same thing with a horse, but he has a pitcher full of, like, Kool-Aid, like, lack of a better term, like, dyed water in it. Like, I guess he has to try and keep that pitcher full of whatever being dragged around the arena. They never mentioned what the event was, but I thought that one was quite interesting. Like, all the different videos that I watched from about this, there was one thing that was in common from all the inmates. They all said it helps you participating in the rodeo. Helps you forget about being incarcerated while incarcerated.
Like, did they get taught how to, like, ride the bulls or the horses?
Probably not. Like, one of them, he was in the one in Louisiana, he's in there for murder, and he'd never dealt with animals like this before ever. And he's doing it for the money because they were getting, like, paid, like, 2 cents an hour working fields where he can make hundreds in a single event in the rodeo.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wish I could remember my fucking question. God, I wish I could remember my question. It was going to be a good one, too.
Yeah. And, like, they also interviewed one lady that came to see the rodeo. She said it's quite interesting that a lot of the people, the trustees that are out selling, like, the, you know, wood car, you know, their woodwork or their artwork they made or leather work, whatever they made to sell, is that a lot of them just want to talk to people, even if you don't buy anything, because that's, like, the only interaction they get with people. You know, even though they may or may not get visitors, this is, like, the only interaction they get.
Yeah.
With anybody from the outside world is, you know, in the craft fair at the rodeo.
So they get to sit in their own booth and, like, sell their stuff?
Like, the trustees are the ones that are, like, zero disciplinary issues or whatever, you know, stuff like that. They're a representative for certain parts of the prison. So, like the one that's doing the leather work, yeah, he murdered his wife. But since he's gotten trustee status, because he's probably been zero issues at all, so that's probably why, and they know he's a no-fly risk, even though they're probably within still prison walls.
Right.
But he's not going to try and make some kind of move to escape.
Right.
Because you don't earn the level of being a prison trustee by being a flight risk or a disciplinary issue. Being a trustee is a privilege within prison, and I'm sure, like, even participating in the rodeo is a privilege. Getting to go spectate the rodeo is probably also a privilege as well.
Probably. You be good. You get to go watch your homeboys ride around on bulls and horses.
Yep. The Texas Prison Rodeo also was featured in the movie Urban Cowboy for one of the scenes. Mm-hmm. It came up as some of the things. I tried to find a clip on YouTube of it for movie clips. I couldn't find anything on it, unfortunately. All I could find was like one still of the movie from just the back of the cowboys with in their prison stripes with the number on the back, and that was it.
Huh. So they have numbers on their uniforms?
Well, yeah. For easier identification for, you know, multiple, you know, events or ranking people, you know, because John Brown, number 3, is going to be better than trying to list somebody else.
Yeah.
And just the name off to find somebody for scoring reasons and whatnot.
That's fair.
Even though they're only considered a number as an inmate, even though they're still a number inside the bullpen of the, you know, the rodeo, but...
Yeah.
And that's a whole other different number.
Right. It's a much smaller number. Less numbers.
The old Browning, and there was one other guy I forgot to put, I was going to put in. I can find more information on old Browning. Their time as a prison rodeo cowboy actually helped them get paroled. Because they became such a legend on the prison rodeo, they went to go and be in the professional circuit also.
That's what I was going to ask. Did any of them actually, like, once they left prison, become professional
riders? Yeah, there was two of them. The two names came up. I had the other one in there, and for some reason I took it back out. But they both, being legends, I guess, lack of a better term, of the Texas prison rodeo, they were able to go get paroled easier and become professional cowboy rodeos. The one I did mention in the episode did violate his parole, couldn't find out what reason why, and he ended up going back to prison.
Oh, no. To continue participating in the rodeo?
Yeah, and he did after he went back to prison.
Jeez.
Until he died in 1997.
Huh. That's interesting. I've never heard of those.
Yeah. See, this is like, it came up last week on my Facebook, and like, as like, I heard about it on one of my favorite shows before we started doing this was Ridiculous History. They talked about it there once before.
Yeah.
And then totally forgot that it existed to put it on my list, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And then it came up as a random Facebook post on my newsfeed last week. And I was like, I'm going to do that.
It's like, ding, ding, ding.
Mm-hmm.
We have a wiener.
Because it's been a very long time since I've done an episode of sorts like that.
Yeah, it really has.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I need to start getting back into doing that thing so we just don't become a true crime podcast.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing. And just get back to how we originally started this 3 years ago.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Your weird history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was the Texas Prison Rodeo. Unfortunately, kind of a short one this week, even though the way I formatted my notes on that, it made like five pages long. I was like, cool, this is going to be longer than it's going to be a pretty decent sized episode. And
yeah.
It's shorter than I expected it to be.
Well, how does your 5 pages, and I had 7 pages...
It's because of how I formatted it, and font size probably is why I made it be 5. Because
my 7 pages was like over an hour. It's like, how did your 5 pages become 20-some minutes?
Just because of how I...
spaced it out and stuff?
Probably. But anyway, that's something we can talk about in the shop truck on the way home from the emporium. So with that said, are you ready to get out of here for the night, sir?
I is.
So until next time, guys.
Remember to creep real.
And stay spooky.
Join our Facebook group by searching Macabre Emporium. Like and subscribe on YouTube at Macabre Emporium Podcast. Follow us on TikTok at Macabre Emporium Pod. Follow us on Twitter at Macabre Emporium. If you have any stories of the paranormal, your local true crime, or weird history that you would like us to look into and possibly do an episode on, email us at macabreemporiumpod@gmail.com. And remember to follow, rate, review, and share whenever and wherever you can to help us grow our podcast.